Yuma Pei Gimel. We are starting at the top of Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. We are working off of the Mishnah from yesterday. Mishnah told us that any chola who is in a state of sekanas nefashos is in fact allowed and obligated to eat on Yom Kippur, as pikuach nefesh, the saving of somebody's life, is going to be overriding all the Yisurim in the Torah. Notable exceptions we went through in yesterday's daf, three notable exceptions in which you have to give up your life for, but outside of those three, Gilui Arayos, Shfichus Dam, and Avodah Zarah, so one must preserve one's life. And so if the person is in critical condition because of the fast on Yom Kippur, so that individual is in fact allowed, obligated to eat. In terms of determination of whether the person is in a state of being a chola, so the Mishnah taught us yesterday, and we start with the Gemara, where the Gemara addresses this very question in terms of how exactly this determination is going to be made. And we're going to start with the statement of Rabbi Yannai. First, the heading, chola ma'achin osa api b'kiin, I'm Rabbi Yannai. So we start with the statement of Rabbi Yannai, chola amar tzarech. If the chol himself is determined that he's in a critical condition and he needs to eat v'rofe, omar ein tzarech, but the doctor says he doesn't need to eat, shomim l'chola, under those circumstances, we'll listen to the chola, even though the doctor is disagreeing. My time on Levi Odeh Maras Nafsho, the Pasuk of Mishlei says that a person knows himself, and so we're going to be listening to the person over that of the doctor. Pshita, the Gemara sounds like, seemingly this is an obvious point, and the Gemara is bothered by the fact that Rav Yannai has to teach us a point that's so obvious. The Gemara says, no, Ma'udu Tema, Rofei Kuim Lutfei, it could very well be that the doctor just simply knows better. So Kamash Milan, the Chiddush is no. That even though obviously the doctor has an expertise, nevertheless, we're still going to listen to the patient. Rofe Amr Tzarech. Now, same discussion, but we're going to reverse scenarios where the doctor's insisting that this person needs to eat V'chol Amr Eino Tzarech, and this person says no. The person does not feel that he himself is in critical condition. Shomim L'Rofe. We listen to the doctor, Ma'itayma, Tunva U'denaki Leg. So, and the reason why we listen to the doctor is because we're afraid that because of this person's condition, so not only is he physically ill, but it just also is taking away in terms of his ability to reason and make good decisions. So under those circumstances, we're going to argue that despite the fact that he thinks he's fine and he's telling everybody that he does not need to eat, the fact that the doctor says he needs to eat, so we're going to assume that he does, and the fact that he is disputing that fact is just a function of right now he's not in the best mental health as well. Tanan, with Rav Yannai's two halachas now in mind, the Gemara is going to go back to our Mishnah and see if this works out in the Mishnah. Cholam achin osa api b'kiin. So the Mishnah says that as far as somebody who is sick, so we'll feed him, but only as per the advice of two doctors. And the diuk is very simple. Api b'kiin in api atzmo lo. So first of all, you need professional advice, and his self-reporting seemingly from the Mishnah doesn't work. So that's already one problem in the Mishnah. Number two, api b'kiin in api baki echad lo. Furthermore, the Mishnah says you need two doctors, which means one doctor simply does not qualify. And so our Mishnah now is problematic for Rav Yannai, not for one, but for two reasons. So the Gemara says, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to contextualize our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is, in fact, talking about a very specific scenario, and that's why our Mishnah has two doctors. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Darmer lo tzarechina. So the case of the Mishnah is where the chol himself says he doesn't need to eat. So the Gemara says, v'lis v'lei, api baki. Yeah, but if we're subscribing to Rabbi Yannai, I only need one doctor to say that he needs to eat, and that should be sufficient. So the Gemara's response is, lo tricham, di'ika achrina b'hadei darmer lo tzarech. No. There happens to be that not only is the patient saying that he does not need to eat, he's supported by a doctor. So along with the patient, a doctor also is coming along and saying he doesn't need to eat. So now that is two opinions who says he does not need to eat. So the Gemara says, now our Mishnah is telling us that under those circumstances, if two doctors say that he does need to eat, so then he, in fact, the halach is that he should eat. So the Gemara says, okay, that's what the Mishnah is coming to teach us, pshita. Gemara says, I think that point is obvious. To which the Gemara's response is, meaning this is a case of 2-on-2. And 2-on-2, so this is a even match. And considering the fact that the stakes over here is suffic nefasha, so of course the person's going to eat. And if this is the case of the Mishnah is not really providing a chiddush. Lo tzricha, the Gemara says, no, it's necessary. Da'ika tre'achrina b'hadei da'amri lo tzarech. So the Gemara says, okay, what we're going to do now is give a slightly different kimta in the Mishnah in order to appreciate and understand what the chiddush of the Mishnah is. Not only is the cholah saying that he does not need to eat, in addition to that, two doctors, in addition to the cholah, says that he does not need to eat. Now we have a chiddush, because now a total of three people, meaning both the cholah and two doctors, say that he does not need to eat. And on the other side, you have two doctors says that he does need to eat. Now the Mishnah is telling us a chiddush, and that is the halachis, is that he should eat. And the Gemara says, now let's consider. Now, as far as the Aedus is concerned, so we say that two is like 100 and 100 is like two, meaning that once you have a group of witnesses, two or above, so we're always going to give each of these groups the same weight and the same credence. Hani milin yedus. The Gemara says, good, that's in terms of the halachas of Aedus. But when it comes to opinions, meaning appraisals and assessments, so there, the larger group is the one that's going to be weighted more. The Gemara says that's true, but hani milin inyan umdananda mamona. Yeah, when we're talking about appraisals, like financial appraisals, so then, yeah, so if a group that is a larger group comes up with a financial appraisal, so their position is going to be weighted higher because we're talking about a financial appraisal. But over here, the appraisal is his health and his care. And so for that, the Gemara says that basically we're going to go back to it's one group against another group. Meaning I have a group of doctors who say that he does not need to eat, and it happens to be that the patient's position also is that he does not need to eat. On the other hand, I now have another group of doctors that he does need to eat, and despite the fact that right now the total number of people that say that he does not need to eat in this particular case is three, nevertheless, as far as this particular halacha is concerned, and even though it's an umdana, but still we're going to treat it as one group against another, basically it's a safek. And again, because it is a suffering nefasha, so therefore we're going to be machmir, and therefore the determination is that he needs to eat. Okay. So far, what we've done now is successfully defended Rav Yonai, and as far as our Mishnah is concerned, we've limited our Mishnah to a very specific scenario. The Hamidik Tani say for the Gemara says, okay, but go to the end of the Mishnah, because the end of the Mishnah writes, V'yimein sham b'ki ma'achin l'osu al pi'atzmo, that if there are no doctors, so then you can feed him based on his own self-reporting. So the Gemara says, Melchal d'reisha damar tzarech. Now, if that is the second half of the Mishnah, where he says that he needs to eat, so it sounds like in the ratio of the Mishnah also, he's saying he needs to eat. And again, the ukimta that we just gave in the Mishnah is not going to work with that diuk. Chesur mechzer v'achiktani. So the Gemara says, okay, what we're going to have to do is that there is a missing gap of the Mishnah, we're going to fill it in. And b'med v'arma mon damar lo sarachani. So when is it the fact that we're going to insist that he eats despite the fact that he says he does not need to? So that's talking about a case of where he says lo sarachani, meaning that basically in the first case of the Mishnah, he's arguing that he does not need to eat. And now after the Mishnah presented that case, the Mishnah says, yeah, that's true if he says, I don't need to eat. Aval amar tzarachani, but if he says he needs to eat, ein sham bikin trei, and if there aren't two doctors that are there, elechad amar latzarech, but only one doctor says he doesn't need to eat, machin oso al piatzmo, so then we're going to feed him based on his own need to eat. So basically what we did now is that we added a lot more into the Mishnah. So basically we've separated the first case of the Mishnah and the second case of the Mishnah. In the first case of the Mishnah, he's arguing that he does not need to eat. And under those circumstances, we're going to feed him based on the advice of doctors. And the chiddush of the Mishnah is that once you have two doctors saying that he does need to eat, so now it is a case of suffix, and therefore he is in fact going to eat. And the chiddush is, as the Gemara just highlighted, that even if two other doctors agree with him that he doesn't need to eat, nevertheless, this is now still qualifies as a suffix, and therefore he's going to eat. And the second half of the Mishnah, he's arguing that he does need to eat, as long as he's only being contested by one doctor, so then we're going to listen to him over that of the one doctor. Okay. All this now is Shitas Rav Yonai. Continuing in the Gemara, Mar Baravashi Amar Kol Heichad Amar Tzarachani. According to Mar Baravashi, whenever he says he needs to eat, so Afilu Ika Mea Da Amar Lo Tzarach. Even if a team of 100 doctors say that he does not need to eat, and there is simply no medical reason why he would need to eat, Nevertheless, l'didei shaminim, we still listen to him. Shenem lev yodea maras nafsho. A person knows his own bitterness, and according to Mar Baravashi, the pasuk is there to teach us that under those circumstances, even if many doctors are disputing his claim that he's in critical condition, nevertheless, we're going to listen to him over the doctors. Tanan, the Gemara is going to challenge the view of Mar Baravashi. Now, if there are no doctors over there, Machlin Asa Piatzmo, so he can feed him based on his own self-reporting. Time of delay could be kim. That's only because there are no doctors. Ha'ika could be kim lo, which would mean that if there are doctors, so then we would listen to the doctors over him. And this obviously goes directly against the shita of Mar Baravashi. So Hachi Kamar, so the Gemara says, no, well, here's how we'll read the Rashi in defense, I'm sorry, here's how we'll read the Mishnah in defense of Mar Baravashi. When is this true? In the circumstance where he says, no, I don't need to eat. But if he says he needs to eat, ein sham bikim klal. So basically what we say is that there is no doctors, meaning there's no expertise. Under these circumstances, once he claims that he needs to eat, so we are going to dismiss and ignore any and all opinions, even if there are a team of doctors saying that he doesn't need to eat. So machin also api atzmo shenem leiv yodeh maras nafsho. And again, based on the pasuk and mishlei, comes out from the Gemara over here is that we have a machlokas amoraim in terms of the limits and parameters of when a chola is allowed to eat on Yom Kippur in the circumstance where he thinks he needs to eat. According to Rabbi Yanai, if he's contradicted by one doctor, so it's him against one doctor. So the halach is that he'll be able to eat. If on the other hand he is contradicted by two doctors and it's just his position, so then it's one against two, and his view is going to be outweighed by the doctors, and therefore he will not eat. That's Shitas Rav Yanai. Mar Baravashi is of the position that once he claims that he needs to eat, even if he is going to be contradicted by a team of doctors, 100 doctors, nevertheless, the halacha is that such an individual will be allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. His own self-reporting regarding his need to eat is going to outweigh even a team of doctors. The halacha falls like Mar Baravashi. We continue now. We are in the Mishnah Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. Misha Achzo Bomas, a person who is suffering from Bomas. Bomas is some form of malnutrition. Rashi describes it over here, reading the Rashi, Chol Ochez Machmas Ra'avon. So it is based on the fact that he's hungry and he's malnourished. And Rashi goes on to describe Ein of Chaos, and also the eyes start dimming. V'hu Mesukan Lamos. And Rashi writes that this is a critical condition. U'kishamari So Chazers Biadush Nisrape. And when you see that his vision, his lights start lighting up, so it's at that point in time we know that he's no longer in the kind of danger, in the critical danger that he was when his eyes were not lit up. So Mishach Zobomus, so the Mishnah goes on to describe that someone who is suffering from this kind of ailment, Machinus Afil Dvarim Temeim, feed him even non-kosher food, Ad Shiyeiru Einav, until his eyes light up again. Someone bitten by a rabid dog. So you do not feed it its liver. Meaning that there was a treatment that was practiced back in the day, that someone was bitten by a rabid dog. So they would kill the dog, remove the liver, and feed the liver to the victim. And according to the Tanakh of our Mishnah, that is not to be done. Rav Masya ben Charash Matir. Now, according to Rav Masya ben Charash, it is in fact allowed. Rashi points out over here the machlokes between these two Tanayim. You can see Rashi machil mechatzar kafei shelo the afa pishin ragan arofim berufu azu. Even though doctors do practice this kind of medicine, ena refua gemura. Rashi describes it as being not a bona fide therapy. It hasn't gone through, I'm using modern terminology, but it hasn't gone through all the trials. It hasn't gone through phase one, phase two, phase three trials. It's not Badak U'Menusa, it's not been perfectly tested out, and so therefore, according to the Tanakhama, it does not qualify as a Refu Gemura. In order to allow this person to be eating a non-kosher animal, the liver of a dog obviously is not kosher, so it has to be the kind of therapy which we know is going to be effective, and over here, it's not perfectly effective. That's the sheet of the Tanakhama. Rav Masya, on the other hand, says that it would be mutter. Rashi writes over here, according to Rav Masya, so refuah gemurahi. No, it is a bona fide refuah. A little bit difficult to understand exactly this machlokes between the Tanayim, right? They're arguing about pharmaceuticals. They're arguing as to whether a drug is good or it's not good. It does not seem like a machlokes, a halachic machlokes. It seems to be a machlokes in mitzvahs, and I'm sure that there is a much more nuanced way to explain the machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Masya. But at least right for now, that's the way we're going to present it. Mishnah goes on to say, Hachoshish Begron, or someone who has a pain in his throat. And again, we're talking about some sort of serious illness. The Gemara itself is going to describe it as a Tzvidna. We're going to see that in tomorrow's daf. So, but anyway, it's could be connected to something like scurvy. Either way, Hachoshish Begrono, so Matin Lo Sam Besoch Piv B'Shabbos. So you put the medicine in his mouth on Shabbos. Mipnei shu safek nefashos, because it's safek nefashos, v'chol safek nefashos, doches haShabbos. Chances are he's looking at a critical situation, and so therefore it is in fact going to override the Shabbos. Mishnah for alav mapolas, building collapses on a person on Shabbos. Rachmana, safek hu sham, safek en sham. Not sure if the person's there or not. Safek chai, safek meis. Not sure if the person's alive or dead. Safek kusi, safek Yisrael. Not sure whether the person's a Jew or not. Mefachin lav ezegal. Nevertheless, you're going to start clearing away the rubble. Masu chai mefachin. If you find the person alive, so you continue uncovering, and the imes inichu. But if not, if the person is discovered, but the person is clearly dead, so then you stop digging on Shabbos, and then you finish it after Shabbos with the kvura obviously taking place after Shabbos. The Gemara is going to explain this case in much greater detail, and what exactly we're learning out from the second half of the Mishnah, which seemingly we already knew in terms of pikuach nefesh. We're starting with the Gemara. Tana Rabbana Minayin Hayoyodim Sheheiru Einav. How do you know that the person's eyes are illuminated? Mishiyavchim Bein Tol Ra. The person is able to distinguish between good and bad. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Amar Rabbaya Uvitayma. He has his taste buds back. He's able to taste sweet, sour, and so at that point in time, you know that whatever treatments we've been trying have in fact worked and are successful. A person who's experiencing this bulimus and he needs to eat, again, it's this malnutrition. So what you're going to do is you're going to give him foods that are usher, but what you should do is you should minimize the isser that's presented to him. When it comes to Yisurim in the Torah, so there is a sliding scale of something being more usser than another. Generally speaking, as a general rule, when it comes to mitzvahs of the Torah, mitzvahs esse, positive commandments, so we don't know which mitzvah is more critical, more important than another. It is near impossible to try to gauge the significance of one mitzvah over another mitzvah when it comes to mitzvahs esse. A couple of notable exceptions, but generally speaking, it's hard to gauge. In fact, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that we're not allowed to look at a mitzvah kala versus a mitzvah chamura and start labeling mitzvahs as one being lighter, the other one being more significant. And so, that's true when it comes to mitzvahs, when it comes to positive commandments of the Torah. However, when it comes to Yisurim, it is a much easier venture to try to gauge which of the Yisurim is more significant than the other, and it's really a function of onish and punishment, meaning that the Torah tells us what the punishments are for the various Yisurim of the Torah, and so therefore we know which punishments are more severe than others, so it is obviously then therefore much easier to gauge which Yisur is going to be more prohibited than the other, and as a result of that, you have a person who needs to eat, he's in a state of a sakana, and he needs to eat, but still, we should be sensitive to the fact that we should give him an isser that is a lighter isser. And here, we're going to see numerous examples provided in the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, Mishach Zubamos, Ma'achin Oso Akal Akal. So Tevel Nevela, so if it's a choice of either giving him Tevel or Nevela, Ma'achin Oso Nevela. So you're going to give him Nevela. Nevela is just a standard lav the prohibition, the onus of nevela is malchus. On the other hand, person eating tevel, untithed produce, so that's going to be misa bidei shemaim. That's a higher level of punishment. So give him the nevela over the tevel. Tevel shvius, if the choices are tevel shvius, then what we're talking about shmita over here, most probably what we are describing is shmita post zman biur. Without going through all the details right now, we know that the shmita produce, while there are still fruit out in the field, there's a mitzvah to eat the shmita produce. But once the fruit is no longer out in the field, so then there is a mitzvah of biur. One must destroy the perishvias. It is a debate amongst the Rishonim exactly what that means to destroy the perishvias. But for our purposes right now, let's just say that it means that you have to dispose of it. You have to destroy it. And so eating the perishvias post biur is also going to be an issur. So if it's tevel versus shvias, so then shvias. So then, of course, you're going to go with shvias, which is a prohibition, but nothing like tevel. Again, tevel is misa b'dei shemayim. Tevel or truma, the choice is between tevel and truma. And when we say truma, we mean a non-kohen eating truma. So tonight, that's a machlokas amongst the tonight. The Gemara quotes, the tanya will lenten a brisa machlokas, so tevel we feed tevel, vein machlokas, so truma, but not truma, ben tema omer truma, velo tevel. And the Gemara now goes on to explain. Now, if it's a situation where what you can easily do is take the tevel and tithe it and remove chumas and maisos, so then of course it's a no-brainer. You're going to take off the chumas and maisos from the tevel, and that's of course what you're going to give to the chola. So key pligi, the debate over here is b'dolo efshar b'chulin. You can't take off chumas and maisos. Let's say, again, we're talking about somebody who is significantly malnourished and he needs to eat as much food as possible, and if we were to take off chumas ha-maisos, so then he's just not going to have enough food to eat. So it's a situation where you can't take off chumas ha-maisos. So now mar sefer tevel chamor. Now one position is that tevel is more stringent, mar sefer truma chamor, and the other one is that truma is more chamor. And now, what are the two sides of this issue? The Gemara goes on to explain. Mar sefer tevel chamor, the one who says that tevel is more stringent, aval truma chazi lekohen. Because look, even though a non-kohen is not allowed to eat truma, but truma is at least something that can be eaten by a segment of our population, notably the kohanim. Umar sefer truma chamor, on the other hand, the argument could be that truma is more chamor, aval tevel efshel letkunei. When it comes to tevel, there's a way to remedy tevel. In other words, you could take off chumas ha-maisos. Now, again, in this particular scenario, we don't have that option, but at least it is an option in general to take off chumas ha-maisos. So you can make an argument why chumas should be more chamor than tevel, and you can make an opposite argument as well. As we turn to the top of the Amud Beis, so the Gemara says, efshar b'chulin pshita. So the Gemara says, wait one second. We said that if you're in a position where you had tevel and you could take off chumas ha-maisos, so then you should take off chumas ha-maisos. The Gemara says at that point in time, isn't that one of the more obvious statements that we could be making? Meaning if you could take off chumas ha-maisos, so then what discussion is there to even have? So efshar b'chulin pshita. So lo tzricha b'shabbos. So the Gemara says, no, we're talking about a case where it's Shabbos. So we know that on Shabbos, one is not allowed to take off chumas ha-maisos, although that is only in Issur d'Rabbanan. When we get to Masech Tebeitzah, we're going to be talking about this in more detail. But it's still only in Issur d'Rabbanan, so the B'Shabbos Nami Pshita, Tilto Mid d'Rabbanan, so the Gemara says exactly this point. So, okay, but on Shabbos, we're talking about Issur d'Rabbanan. So at worst, it is an Issur d'Rabbanan. So, of course, if somebody's life is in jeopardy, so isn't it obvious that you'd be taking off Chumas and Maisos? And what's even the discussion? So, Hachav HaMaiskin, Ba'asin Sheinu Nakov d'Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, so we're talking about a case over here where, to remedy the tevel, so you'd be taking off chumas ha-maisos, and because of Shabbos, you'd be violating an issur d'rabbanan to do so. That's true. On the other hand, as far as the truma is concerned, the truma over here is not a truma d'oraisa, it is a truma d'rabbanan, meaning it grew in a pot that was not perforated, did not have holes in it. And that means to say that although the produce in there, you're going to take off chumas ha-maisos, but that's only a din d'rabbanan, not a din d'oraisa. The only time mid d'oraisa you have to take off chumas ha-maisos is where the produce actually received the nourishment from the ground. Since over here it did not receive direct nourishment from the ground, so therefore it is not chayav chumas ha-maisos mid d'oraisa, but rather only mid d'rabbanan. And so now basically what we're looking at is a derabbanan versus a derabbanan. One derabbanan is the tevel where on Shabbos you're not allowed to remove trumas amaisos midderabbanan. The other derabbanan is produce that grew in a non-perforated pot, which now is not min hatorah required to take off trumas amaisos. So now it's one derabbanan over another derabbanan. Now that we have clarified that it's one derabbanan over another derabbanan, so of course it begs the question, so why, what would give one of them precedence over the other? Marsava, that's the Gemara's next point. Marsava, tevel chamor, so Ben Tema's of the position that tevel becomes more severe. Umarsava truma chamura. And the Tanakhama would be that no, truma is going to be more severe. And the Gemara now goes on to explain. So lema tanaihi. So this question, this issue now, in terms of which the Rabbanim being more severe, so it could very well be that's connected to another machlokas tanaim. Detanya, we learned in the Brisa Mishnah Nachash, someone who was bitten by a snake, karen lo rofi mimakum lamakum. So we're gonna call a doctor from wherever we can find a doctor, mikaren lo satanagolos. And what we're gonna do is that we're gonna tear open the chicken and put on the wound. That was a way of therapy back then. Vigos and secretion, and we're going to cut leaks from the ground. So the ein tzarech la'aser, and there's no need to take off meiser. Divrei Rabbi, this is Shitas Rabbi, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo yocha ad shi'aser. And according to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, you can only give him the leaks, but only after you took off chumos u'maisros. So name a Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon, Hivalo Rebbe. So now the halacha that came down from Rabba is only going according to the Shita of Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon, and it's not going like the Shita Rebbe. So the Gemara says not necessarily. Afilu Tema Rebbe. No. It could very well be that Rabba's halacha is going to be working even within the Shita of Rebbe. How can that be? Rebbe says that we're going to pass on taking off trumas and maisos, but there we're talking about vegetables. The halacha of trumas and maisos by vegetables is strictly derabbanan. But when we're talking about maiser dagan, the taking off trumas and maisos of grain, that is a din deraisa. So I feel a Rebbe moed. So Rebbe would agree that that for the sick person, So something that is a deraisis should be mafish or masamaisis. Yishar le basa shein or nakav. Now remember, this is in the scenario where it was coming from a non perforated pot, which means that it's only a chiyuv midrabanan. However, the chiyuv derabanan of grain in a non perforated pot is still more. It's on a higher level. It's a higher requirement than pure vegetables. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Because once you get comfortable with not taking off trumas amaisos from a non-perforated pot, so then next time you're planting in a perforated pot, you're going to behave the same manner, and there you're going to be failing on a din d'oraisa, on something which is tevel min haTorah. So the Gemara says, so under those circumstances, for sure you're going to want to take off trumas amaisos on a din derabanan. It's a din derabanan an gzeira, which may lead to an issur d'oraisa. On the other hand, when it comes to vegetables, by vegetables there's no time where it's ever going to lead to an issur d'oraisa. Vegetables are always going to be pater from trumas amaisos min haTorah. Okay. So after much discussion regarding which is going to take precedence over what, let's just quickly summarize. The basic points of the Gemara is that when you have a chola and he needs to eat foods which are not kosher, so you feed him foods that are not kosher, but with the sensitivity that you give him the lighter of the isurim. And the Brisas gave us very clear-cut examples of what are examples of lighter isurim, and then we get to some of the more trickier ones where basically they seem to be on par with one another. One example would be where it's truma and it's tevel, truma for non-kohen and tevel. They're both misa b'dei shemayim. So then what's going to take precedence over what? And then on top of that, the Gemara had another discussion where they're both derabbanans, meaning one would be the derabbanan of not being mafish truma samaisos on Shabbos, and the other one would be the derabbanan of growing in a pot that's not perforated, and that also would be a derabbanan, in which derabbanan is going to be more harsh, more severe than the other derabbanan. Okay. So, but when all said and done, the basic idea, of course, is that you should always try to minimize the isser, even though we are saving somebody's life. All this, by the way, brings us to the larger point, where because the Gemara is spending so much time talking about how you should be introducing him to a lighter isser, so it would sound like from our Gemara that the idea that pikuach nefesh is doche is that it overrides isurim, but it's not matir. It doesn't just give us carte blanche. Meaning, if in fact it would have given us carte blanche, so then you never have to take into account the idea of which isur is lighter, which isur is stronger. Meaning, we could just simply say that it's matir is a isur. The fact that we have to take these things into consideration certainly indicates that it's doche se iser, but it's not matir se iser. And this is a major debate amongst the Rishonim, whether or not pikuach nefesh is hutra, or whether or not it's tuchuya. And our Gemara seems to be taking a very strong position on this issue. Again, much larger topic, but just those are the very basics. Tanu Rabbanan. We're in Ayin Beis Amud Beis. We are a little bit less than halfway down in the Amud. So Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes a brisa mishach. So Bomo, somebody who is suffering from this malnutrition. So you're going to give him honey and all different types of sweets. It's going to restore his eyesight. And we do have a proof in Tanakh. The pasuk says regarding Yehonah's son, Ru'u na ki oru einai ki ta'amti ma'at dvash hazeh. So there was a neder made by Shaul not to eat on that day. They were fighting against the Plishtim. Yohanan didn't know about it. He was starving. He took some honey. Anyway, the pasuk that is relevant to our discussion is that he said that when he ate the honey, so that his eyes lit up, and so it is a good proof that honey is gonna take away the not only the hunger pangs but bring back your eyesight. So my alpha pishein raya ladav. Now the Gemara says, now this is not a proof. What do you mean it's not a proof? Pasuk seems to be pretty clear. So the Gemara says, no, da'asam la bomasachse. No, it happens to be that Yohanan, under those circumstances, so he wasn't suffering from bomas, he was just simply suffering from being hungry. Amar Rabbi Loshana al-Achra Chilam. Giving this patient who's suffering from bomas and giving him sweet foods, so that's after you feed him regular food. So avakarma achila migra gare. But if you don't give him regular food and you go straight to the sweets, it's only going to make him hungrier. Dechsev, the pasuk says, so they found this Egyptian, and they took him to David HaMelech, and he was famished. So they gave him bread, and they gave him water. And then afterwards, they gave him figs and raisins. This Egyptian went 3 days of not eating anything, and so he was starving. So even though he was significantly malnourished, so you see clearly over here that first they gave him quote unquote regular food, and then and only then afterwards did they give him the sweets. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Mishach Sabomos. The Gemara is going to give some other remedies in terms of somebody who was suffering from bomos ma'achlin so alia b'devash, the fatty tail of an animal, together with honey. Rav Huna b'Rei de Rav Yeshua Amar Afsolos Nikia b'devash, a flower together with honey. And Rav Papa Amar Afilu Kimchi Desiri b'divsha, even barley flour together with honey. So other remedies. Amar Rav Yochanan Pamachas Achsani Bomos. Rav Yochanan noted that was one time that he suffered. He went to the east side of the fig tree. The pasuk says that somebody who is wise, so he's going to do a good job preserving himself. You want the best figs? Yifne lemizracha, go to the east side of the tree. Shenemar, the pasuk says, me magid tvo shamish, in the end of the Torah, in Vizosa Bracha. So one of the brachas is that it's the one of the best figs are the ones where the sun meets it in the morning, i.e. the eastern side, where the sun is going to be hitting it first thing in the morning. Gemara is going to tell a couple stories regarding Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. The first story that we're going to hear is going to be relevant to our discussion on Bulmas. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi have a ka'azle ba'orcha. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi were on their way. Afse Bulmas le Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda was suffering from this malnourishment. Kabche le roach le rifta. And so what he did is he ran to a shepherd and he just simply grabbed the bread in order to eat the bread. So it is pikuach nefesh, and he felt that he had the right to just simply take the bread and eat it. There is a lengthier discussion to be had regarding whether one is allowed to steal in order to save that person's life, to save his own life. It is certainly relevant based on the fact that yesterday we learned that there were only three serm that one must give up his life for, and stealing is not one of them. So there is still nevertheless a discussion to be had about stealing in order to preserve one's life, what is also referred to as Hind's dilemma. And the Gemara certainly plays a role in that discussion. So kapka l'roa achla l'rifta. So he just simply took the bread from the shepherd, and he ate it. So Amalei Rabbi Yossi kapachtos l'roa. Now Rabbi Yossi was very critical, and he says, "I don't understand. So you stole right from the shepherd." So kimak l'masa. Now when they got to the city, achzei bumas Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi was suffering also from this malnourishment. So adru bagla v'tzayi. So all the people of the city came around, and they came with basically plates of food. So Amalei Rabbi Yehuda, ani kapachti sarava, ata kapachta sirkula. So Rabbi Yehuda says back to Rabbi Yossi, look, so I may have only taken from the shepherd, but meanwhile you took from the entire city. Okay, so an interesting back and forth between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi both of them suffering from this bulmus. So Gemara tells now one more story with the two of them, and with this is going to conclude the daf. Vesu, furthermore, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Yehavika Azib Orche, so they were walking on the way. Rabbi Meir, Havadai Bishma. Rabbi Meir had a custom in which, whenever he heard somebody's name, so he basically assessed the individual, basically a personality inventory just based on the name itself. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Lo Havadai Bishma, but meanwhile, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi did not conduct themselves in that manner. They gave no credence to the name. So they got to a certain place and they needed a place to stay in Yavuluhu. So they went to a particular inn. Amru lo mashmecha. They asked the innkeeper, what's your name? Amrulei Kidur. So he tells the Tanayim that his name is Kidur. Amr shmamina. So Rabbi Meir said, and as we're going to see later, Rabbi Meir did not say this to anybody. He said this to himself. So, Amr Shmamina Adam Rashahu. This person's got to be a bad individual. Shenemar Kidur Tapoch Hoseim. The Pasuk says that this is a generation where it's basically reversed. So it's no good. So anyway, so encrypted in his name is the Kidur of this Pasuk. And so Rabbi Meir arrives at the conclusion this person's no good. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Ashlim Alei Kisaihu. Now, as far as Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi are concerned, so they gave him his wallet, meaning they stay there for Shabbos, and they put it in the lockbox of the hotel. And Rabbi Meir, Lo Ashlim Alei Kisa, Rabbi Meir did not give up his wallet. Azal Uzvei Bei Kivrei Davua. Rather, what he did with his wallet is that he put it in the cemetery. Now, it happened to be of all the cemeteries, of all the sites that he put at the cemetery, he happened to put it on the cemetery of the father of the innkeeper. So it's Chazal Bechama. That night, Friday night, so the father appears to the innkeeper in a dream. And he says to him, Ta shalko kise demanach aresha du gavra. Take the wallet that's off the head of that individual, meaning his own head. So basically, the father came to the son in the dream and said that, look, somebody put a wallet on my head, meaning on my gravesite, and come over and come take it off. Now, all this, of course, occurred in a dream. L'machar, Amar lehu hachis chazel lebechama. So, in the next day, so the innkeeper says now to the Tanayim, I had the strangest dream last night. You're not going to believe it. And he tells him the dream. So, Amar lechama de beishim she leis behu mashasha. So, their response to him is, the dream on Friday night. Don't worry about dreams on Friday night. They don't mean anything. And obviously, they knew, and certainly Rabbi Meir knew, that the dream meant a lot. But basically, Rabbi Meir was trying to dismiss the dream and hopefully save his own wallet. Also, Rabbi Meir, Benatri Kuliyama, Ve'aisei. In fact, Rabbi Meir was so concerned about the safety of his wallet, he just ran right to the cemetery on Shabbos and stood guard for the remainder of the day to make sure that nobody would take his wallet. Obviously, he didn't touch his wallet, but still, he was shomer. He was a watchman over that wallet, over the bounce of Shabbos. L'machar, amale havle kisan. So now the next day, so the other Tanayim who left the wallet with the innkeeper, they said, okay, we're ready to take back our wallet. Could you open up the lockbox? So amalu lo hayu dvar me'olam. Now, this key door, so as Reb Meir predicted, not a good guy. And he says to them, what wallets? What are you talking about? I don't remember you dropping off wallets by me. So amalu hu Rebbe Meir, amai lo da'ikta bishma. So Reb Meir says to the other Tanayim, look, you should have been much more careful. Meaning this person was a bad guy. If you just heard the guy's name, you would have known he's a bad guy. So amalu amai lo mart lamar. So their response to Rebbe Meir is, well, why didn't you warn us? Meaning, if you figured it out, wouldn't you think that that's important information to share with us? So Amar Lahu, Amar Da Amrei Anach Shasha. I was only concerned that that was the individual's personality. Irzuke Mi Amrei, but I don't have enough information where I can conclude in that matter and share that information for you. And if I did, that'd probably be something akin to Lashon Hara, Motzi Shemra. Okay, so I'm telling you should have been more careful and I'm also telling you that I wasn't prepared to just simply malign the individual just because I had a suspicion. So, Mashchu v'aylu lechanusa. So, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Huda now are going to take him to basically the local bar. And I guess their strategy was, we'll have him drink a lot, and he'll tell us exactly where our wallets are. Okay, that's basically something along those lines. So, Chazu tapache asifame. Now what they see is that they saw some lentils on his mustache. So now Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Huda go back to his wife and said, look, you know what your husband said? Your husband said, give us back our wallets. And I know he asked you, right? I'm sure they embellish. I'm sure the Tanaim embellished a little bit. He says, I know that he asked you not to reveal the whereabouts of our wallets, but for whatever reason, the innkeeper had a change of heart, and he wants you to return to us our wallets. And just in case you're worried that your husband hasn't sent us, so we're going to tell him, we're going to tell you what he ate for lunch. The only way we're going to know what he ate for lunch is because he gave us that information as a siman. And so good. So they with the information that he had lentils for lunch, so they were able to convince the wife that. That the husband had a change of heart and that she should return the wallets back to them. So Vishakla Likisa Vaisu, okay, good. So she gave him back their wallets and they were on their way. Azali Bakalisa, so when he got home and he heard what his wife did, so he killed his wife. So and Hainu Ditanya, we learned in a brisa, Mayim Rishonim Echilu Basar Chazir, and Mayim Achronim Hargu as an Efesh. So there are two stories that are told in Shas. One as a consequence of not being careful about Mayim Rishonim, and another as a consequence of not being careful about Mayim Achronim. As far as Mayim Rishonim was concerned, so there was another story where it was a Jewish innkeeper and any guest that didn't do Netilas Yadayim, that didn't wash his hands, so he assumed it's not Jewish, and so therefore he fed him chazer. Anyone who did wash their hands, so he assumed that they were Jewish, and he didn't give him chazer. So there was one guest who was Jewish, but he didn't wash his hands, so he fed him chazer. So that is how, as a consequence of not being careful about Netilas Yadayim, somebody ate chazer. And the other story is that somebody wasn't careful about Mayim Achronim, and therefore, as a result of that Ritzicha, what's that story? That's our story. Meaning that because he wasn't careful about Mayim Achronim, the innkeeper, and so therefore the lentils were still on his face. In other words, he just didn't clean up after he ate. So as a result of that, so they got the information that he ate lentils, etc., etc. So as a result of not being careful about Mayim Achronim, so it resulted in Resicha. Ulevisofa v'dayka b'shma. And the Gemara says, okay, now just as an epilogue to the story, so Rav Yehuda, Rav Yossi learned their lesson. They were always careful about names. They got to a house and the And the owner's name was Bala. Lo Ayla Lagabe, then go inside Amr Shmamina Rasha, who the name Bala, it's a bad name. Dichsiv, the Pasuk says, Va'omer La Bala Noafim. The Pasuk describes how somebody gets worn down by being involved in Niyuf and being involved in adultery so much. And so the Pasuk obviously has an association of the word Bala to Niyuf, to adultery, and as a result of that, so they realize that this is somebody that we should not go into, and they learn the lessons. We're going to stop over here, and Mishnah Shlu Kelev, somebody bitten by a rabid dog, that's where we're going to pick it up in tomorrow's daf. In the meantime, let's use this opportunity to review. The first topic of discussion was, under what circumstances are we going to make the determination that someone is in fact going to be a chola? So doctors say that he needs to eat, so he needs to eat. One doctor says he needs to eat, so he's going to eat. The big discussion that took place is that what if he himself has an opinion, and that opinion is either shared or disputed by other doctors. So we have basically two opinions in our Gemara. We have the Shita of Rabbi Yannai and the Shita of Mar Bar Avashi. According to the Shita of Rabbi Yannai, if it's just his position and he says that he, in fact, does need to eat, but the doctors say that he does not, and it's a team of doctors against just his own position. So under those circumstances, he's not going to eat on Yom Kippur. If he has even just one other doctor who is on his side, so then he is going to eat, because then it's 2-on-2, or could even be 2-on-3, and that's a suffix, and suffix nefashas we're going to be mako. Good. That shita is Rav Yannai. The shita of Mar Bar Avashi is that when a person self-reports and says that he, in fact, does need to eat, even if he's going to be contradicted by 100 other people, nevertheless, the halach is that he's got to eat. And that in of itself creates a suffix nefashos, and it's based on the it's based on the pasuk of Levi Yodea Maras Nafsho. A person knows his own condition and better than an outsider, even if that outsider is in fact a doctor, vis-a-vis the allowance to eat on Yom Kippur. The remaining part of the daf is somebody who is suffering from malnourishment, so that person's in critical condition. The person can violate Isurim, and in the Mishnah it says that he can even eat treif. In the Gemara, so we learned in the bottom of the Amud that means that despite the fact there is a heter for that person to eat treif, but minimize the amount of isur that person should eat, and really what you should try to do is give him something that is less usur than something else. And again, we spent a lot of time on the bottom of the Amud Beis, on the bottom of the Amud Aleph, the top of the Amud Beis, gauging what is in fact going to be the lighter of the isurim. Gemara did in fact get a little bit complicated, as we also compared not only Isuri Daraisa, but even Isuri Darabanan as well. One Isuri Darabanan against other Isuri Darabanan. The conclusion of the daf today ended off with ways to treat this bomos, this malnourishment. And aside from the Mishnah's advice, the Amoraim also give other pieces of advice as well in terms of how it should be treated. And then we ended off the daf today with two stories regarding Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. First stories were both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi were suffering from the bulmus and what they did in order to save their own lives. And the other story is Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi together with Rabbi Meir who went to the hotel and a question of whether or not we're gonna judge somebody just based on his name alone. And Rabbi Meir had the custom of just judging is a little bit strong, but at least being cautious of an individual based on the individual's name. We'll stop over here.